Welcome to Judaism Demystified, a podcast for the perplexed. We are joined by Reb Alex Gutman. Alex is a lifelong businessman living in Teaneck, New Jersey. He attended Kol Torah in Jerusalem in the late 80s. He's been teaching Daf Yomi as well as other shiurim for most of his adult life. During his years in Kol Torah, he was drawn to the Rambam and rational thinking and has continued that fascination throughout his life via his learning. Reb Alex has utilized Facebook and social media in his attempt to bring about change by pointing out superstitious thinking and practices and encouraging important and sometimes uncomfortable conversations. He is also Reb David's son, making them the first father-son combo to appear on the Judaism Demystified podcast. His father was and still is a major influence in his learning development, and they are proud to be business partners and best friends. Without further ado, Reb Alex Gutman. Thank you for joining the Judaism Demystified podcast. So, Mr. Gutman, please tell us a little bit about yourself. And, of course, everyone who listens to the podcast knows who your father is. But if you could please fill us in.
Well, my father is David Gutman. You guys had an interview with him a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago now. I was born in Brazil, São Paulo, Brazil. Came to the United States when I was quite young, so 3-4 years old. Went to Borough Park originally, then lived in Amiwen and East 9th, and then moved to Peen 29th. So from Midwood to Madison, as they call it in Flatbush. My mother's side is Satma Hasidim. My grandmother was one of the founders of Satma Bikochelim. You know, there was always a joke in the family. And we used to make, I hope I don't get killed on this joke, but they used to say with Satma is that if you're dying or deathly ill, Satma Bikochelim will make you, you know, healed again. They'll do anything possible to make sure that your medical bills are taken care of, chicken soup is given to you. They'll do anything they can to keep you alive so they can personally kill you themselves. So that was the
that joke because that's your family, so
right. So that was a joke. I used to tell my grandmother that she used to laugh, but then like look at me like you can't be my grandson. But anyway, so that was a big supporter of her, and she was a real special woman when it came to what she did with the Bikocholim and so on.
An amazing organization.
Amazing what these I'm in the hospital business, so I actually see firsthand what they do, and it's pretty amazing. The incredible Milas Chasadim, which is what we are, right? This is what our religion is all about. So that's the positive side of Satma. And then my father's side was Vishnitz. I used to very close to my grandfather on my Vishnitz side, and my grandmother too. I used to go every Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur for many, many years to the to Muncie Vishnitz Rebbe, you know, the one in Muncie. And I used to get fired by the Rebbe there. And I used to, until I started learning in English. And when that happened, he said to me that, he said to my father, we got to get him out of this yeshiva because he's no longer learning in Yiddish language. Ironically, Aramaic is not that Jewish either, but I didn't want to, you know, shake his boat. But that was my experience. I had some fond memories of Vishnitz and the davening that was there. Then I was in Torah MS as a school, a Kamenetz as a high school. And then I went to Kol Torah in Israel for 3 years. Learned there, which is a great, that was under Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which is a great, great experience. So that was, I used to be shushed by Reb Neivit, who used to down behind me in the Mincha. Me and my Chavrusa, we used to have interesting discussions during Mincha, and Reb Neivit was not a big fan of our Torah learning during Mincha. So Shmir Shabbos Gilchassin sat behind us, which is nice. And so very fond memories are there. And then I was thinking of doing Aliyah, staying in Israel. Didn't have any money, didn't have any idea what I was going to do. So I went to a kibbutz for a couple of months. So I can tell you all the halachas of Trumas and Maestras very well firsthand. And I can tell you, I don't want to be a socialist on any circumstance. so that was the education I got for that. And And ever since, I came back to America. We came went to Pace University, and started a family working in the family business. My father and I are partners in the business. We supply chemicals and disinfectants to the hospitals. We produce our own chemistry, and that's my background. I do a lot of chemistry with the hospitals. And my second hobby is work. My first hobby is learning. So
Fantastic. Your father, you have a very unique relationship with your father, right?
right.
You mentioned to us off camera that he's your best friend.
Yeah, he's my best friend, and I grew up together with him, learning with him my entire life. Business were great. We're best friends together. I mean, we can't run the business without each other. We're both, very reliant on each other. We're very supportive of each other. I'll text him at 5 o'clock in the morning some learning ideas, or 6 o'clock in the morning. We'll have discussions of learning. And I'll WhatsApp him some questions. He'll WhatsApp me back. My father's amazing. I mean, he comes in the morning to work until like 12 o'clock, and then you can't reach him because he learns with my uncle and my business partner till around 2. And then after that, he works for a couple more hours, goes home, and continues learning. So there's certain hours I can speak to him and certain hours I can't. So if the business is burning down, we got to wait until he finishes learning, till we get the there's some extreme cases I could probably disrupt his learning, but it is pretty impressive that he's involved in at this point is like almost like retirement and learning, which is a very a nice thing to see.
I have a 2-year-old son, and I can only dream to have that type of relationship that you have with your father. I can only dream. It's a very inspiring relationship that you have. We all have it with our children.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. No, I'm very lucky. Very lucky to have. And he taught me a lot that I know. He led me on the right derech when it comes to learning. So a lot of the I'm a little bit more of an extremist than he is. So I'm a little bit of a cannoi.
We'll get into that. We'll get into that.
But yeah, I mean, he likes to sort of walk, not to create too much noise. And I'm more into, if we got to create change, we got to make a lot of noise. And
You're big on noise on Facebook, correct?
on Facebook, I do create a lot of unfriending that takes place. Every time I get an unfriending, I'm very excited. That means I really impacted someone well. But yeah, Facebook and shul, I have given shiurim over the years, where I've been asked not to please come back another share. But and I'm always very honored with that too, because it means I made an impact on that. But I do give the Daf Yomi share in the Yeshurun. So I've been doing the Daf Yomi cycle many, many times. Is I think, but the funny, the first time I did my Daf Yomi was, Rabbi Teitelbaum used to have the dial a daf.
Yes, I
Yes.
do.
So I was one of those guys who started the dial a daf. I was like 13 years old, 14 years old. That's how far back. And the funny thing is, if you miss the line, if someone like taps you on the shoulder and asks you a question while you used to be on the phone, you'd have to go and wait till the entire daf ended to go all the way back to the beginning again. So
Think I've used it. I used it once or twice, and I think I remember this.
yeah, you lose your mind because I mean, you became a bucky on the daf because you would hear it the entire thing. And Rabbi Belsky used to give the daf. And what's funny about Rabbi Belsky is I was in Camp Aguda. I was actually a lifeguard in Camp Aguda for a year, and we used to do the Daf Yomi there. And Rabbi Belsky used to give the daf, and I remember we used to sleep in the same building as the Masmidim, and Rabbi Belsky was in charge of the Masmidim. Rabelski gave an amazing Daf Yomi share. I mean, we do, he'd take us out in the middle of the night and show us the stars and explain how the stars work and what the constellations were. I mean, this guy was a brilliant, brilliant genius.
Didn't
Knew
he
all
also
about
write a book on like,
alternative medicine? Is that
yeah,
what you're
but
referring
also,
to?
but
Is that the same Rebelsky? Belsky, yeah, he's from
Yeah.
Torah Vadas, the Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vadas.
That book on alternative medicine is one of the best books I've ever read. It is
It may, yeah, that
fascinating.
might be him. That might be him. He was an interesting man.
He was the same one.
He took issue. I remember reading this years ago, but he took issue with a lot of the nonsense and superstitions that you see around it. Is that could it be the same person?
Could be, it could be. I mean, he was a man of math and science, but he was also the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. So he's a very and he was also ran like the OU. He was a connection with the OU. I remember like it was me and another fellow lifeguard and a waiter that used to come to his daf. And he told me about Belsky, there were like four of us in his daf. You only share a nighttime. And he one time turned to me, he goes, "Where's all the Masmidim?" I go, "Rebbe, I don't want to shock you, but you're the head of the Masmidim. I'm just a lifeguard. What are you asking a lifeguard where the Masmidim are?" But it was an interesting experience. That was my first time around the daf. I've done the daf now five, six times around. When I lived in Woodmere, I used to give the daf yomi there. I used to give sometimes. I'm an early bird, so I do it at 5 o'clock in the morning. I cover it for one of the guys in Young Israel there, and then I also used to give it at nighttime at Edward Avenue. So,
Can I ask you something?
yeah.
When you get up to Agadot, how did you treat that when you would do it, when you do the Daf Yomis? Did you just do it fast and not really think, but or do you like really try to get into those Agadot?
Yeah, I like Agadot for me, especially when you have an hour to give a daf, but I would focus in on certain parts of the Agadot that are rational, and I try to show rational thoughts or thinking behind the Agadot. If many times I refer to the Rambam or refer to other sources to see the Meiri, see what who has a rational explanation of the Agadah. And so I like doing that. I have a lot of fun doing that. When I give a daf yomi share, if I can bring an insight in to how the Agadah works, so what the meaning behind it is, what the message behind it, I think it makes it much more than a fable or a story that some of these guys like to hear when they go through the Agadah.
We were talking about it over Shavuot. Now that we just, whenever you guys are hearing this podcast, we're actually recording this post Shavuot. But whenever we were discussing, like the Agadot, we had a shiur with our Rabbi Maruf, and we were saying how Bensi and I were talking about how, I think it was you or someone else I was talking to, but basically how like people think that they're showing honor to the sages, the Chazal, when they tell all these fantastical stories about them, but they're actually just like kind of denigrating them in a way, because by attaching some type of magical idea to them, you're taking away from the actual brilliant lessons
From
that
the
they're teaching,
wisdom.
the wisdom, exactly.
Yes.
You're
And
losing.
also you have Agadot that the Rambam himself, would say you don't follow because it's so on the edge. And if you can't find an explanation that's non literal or something that's esoteric and it doesn't make sense logically, then you ignore it. Agadah is not halakha that you have to take it. And if especially when you have something that counters science. So the perfect example, I was just reading a letter on astrology that Rambam wrote. Astrology, he holds as Avodah Zarah, and yet you have in the Gemara, people, Tanayim, Amorayim, mostly Amorayim, that were talking about astrology. In their time, it was a science. And the Rambam held that either it was esoteric or you don't follow it, because he holds in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim that following astrology is pure Avodah Zarah.
Right, there's a difference between Agadot that are more scientific based and
Right.
Agadot that are portraying wisdom, but it's
Yeah.
obscure.
Right.
Those are two really different, which both creep up, right? So
Right.
you kind of have to also understand which is which and what really
Right.
is in front of you when you're learning these
Well,
Agadot.
even Ibn Ezra would think of it as like the science of its of the time.
It's fine,
Even
right? Yeah,
Nachmanides, even Ramban, when he talked about necromancy, he said the science of necromancy. Like he understood it as a science.
right, because in the Dark Ages, this stuff was science, and his where he lived, this stuff, was like we have science today. What's fascinating is they follow the science of today, and we have in modern day times people who totally ignore science. You know, they say in order to be religious, you have to ignore science, which is kind of ironic, right? Because the people that they're following are people who follow the science of their time. So they're sort of going back to the science of the Dark Ages and say, we're going to follow that because
they see that as Masorah.
Yeah, but the Ramban himself said that he accepted these things because he went and investigated with his own eyes.
Right.
Whatever science. It is that he concluded or didn't conclude, the point is he did not say that it was because of Masorah.
Right, exactly. It's
because he went and investigated. Yes. That is a scientific endeavor.
Right. And someone said to me today, actually today, he said, oh, it's Minag Avosinu B'Yodeinu, you know, and I said, you know, it's funny because it was a Avodah Zarah called Pesel Micha that lasted all the way from the Shoftim time, all the way to some people say Bayis Rishon, the Churban Bayis Rishon. That means it went all the way through David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech. And the same thing people used to say is Minag Avosinu B'Yodeinu. So, you know, why should we get rid of Pesel Micha? You know, so many times, you know, there's ideas and concepts that, you know, are wrong. Either they're an extreme of Avodah Zarah or they're science that no longer exists. And, you know, people, especially rabbis today, will take that information and make it the Torah. They'll say, this is, you know, what we have to follow. You know, it's funny because I was telling my father tonight, I call him after Yontif. I always call him after Shabbos, after Yontif, to see how he's doing. And I was saying, I go to sleep early, Shavuos night, because it's the best night to sleep of the year. You sleep so much better when everyone else is up. You know, I find it's a much more relaxing sleep. But I'm an early bird, so I wake up a vasikin. So I go to shul, and everyone is passing out, like flying over the benches, their heads down, and the davening. And I'm saying it's kind of interesting. They should really, if you want to really do Shavuos night right, is everyone should wake up a vasikin, forget about the buffet and all the different, you know, sushi and all the different offerings. Have everyone wake up a vasikin, daven, and then learn for 4 or 5 hours until, you know, Kiddush. Because people are passing out. People are literally unconscious in shul. And you always get that chazan on Shavuos morning, you know, who's going to really test and see how tired people really are. Take their time. So it's almost a comedy. But again, this is all based on the Arizal and Zohar. And what's funny is the Zohar says that some people, you know, used to stay up at night. And the Arizal took it the next level and says, I guarantee you that you're going to live the next year and then nothing bad is going to happen to you if you stay up all night. The problem is that when things do go bad, is this time to convert to a different religion? Or what do you do? What do you do next year? Do you stay up? Well, what's the end game if it doesn't go well? It's kind of a dangerous thing for the Arizal to warn people, you know, to do in order to get this schar.
You know, it's funny because Shavuot night for me is one of my favorite nights of the year because I happen to be a person who just loves learning and I'm a night owl.
Yeah.
Right. Unlike you're a morning guy, I'm a night guy. Right. So for me, to sit around, if they would say that, you know, okay, it's the night of Matan Torah, we're just going to, I don't know, learn into the night. And the night owls, you know, they all get up and all learn, and we sat with our Rabbi Maruf and we learned for like, you know, many, many hours and it was a lot of fun. I don't regret it at all. But the whole, once it becomes like, you know, to guarantee you that you're going to live the entire next year.
It's a gimmick.
Right, it's a gimmick. Right.
Like, you know.
It loses its tom.
It loses its tom, exactly. You know, like for me, just come and say, you know, it's Shavuot. We received the Torah, you know, so we want to learn Torah more than usual tonight. And, you know, that's just as good. You know what I mean?
Okay, I heard an interesting thing that this whole Matan Torah thing, where Chazal made it as a Matan Torah, I heard a nice shot on it. It says that, you know, it used to be a harvest festival, you know, around the, that's what the Torah puts it down as a harvest festival. But Chazal saw that we're going to go into exile and you're going to be left with, you know, a Yontif that really has nothing tied to it because you're no longer on your land. So they created this Matan Torah concept because that you can take with you into exile and you can celebrate the Yontif and add more meaning to it. So maybe that's the source of, you know, all this staying up at night and learning because you need to do some type of activity to make it special, you know, to make the yontif.
Shavuot is a little bit, I get
yeah,
it.
Because
Shavuot,
there's no eating matzah, there's no
no sukkah, no
there's not a lot of symbolism that to go around. So you kind of have to manufacture something on that.
You had to create something to do that, right?
That's an excellent idea. And this and the idea that the rabbis turned it into Matan Torah when it was originally a harvest festival. I don't know if you've ever read, but there's a book that I love. It's called Rendezvous with God. It's by Nathan Laufer, Rabbi Nathan Laufer. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Yeah, I heard of him.
You have heard of him.
Yeah.
He develops this idea very, very, very well. Not just with Shavuot, but for many other things like Simchat Torah. There's an element over there also, but you know, he really develops it. If you it's just a suggestion. If that topic interests you, I would highly suggest
it. No, check it out. I definitely will. I'll check it out.
But actually, I wanted to go back to what you mentioned before about Pesel Micha. There's also, you know, the copper snake.
Right.
Which was
one of the things that they Chazal hid, you know, the Sefer of Fools and then the different things that were hidden, whose people were lying. Well, the Rambam says, you know, it's interesting because the Sefer of Fools, which Gemara talks about, was hidden. One of the things that was hidden was a copper snake, like you were saying, became a Avodah Zarah later on.
Yeah, and I think it was Chizkiyahu HaMelech who destroyed it.
Destroyed it, exactly. And also the Sefer Refuah, as the Gemara says, was hidden also. So some people say because the Sefer Refuah was, people were not davening to God, they were using the Sefer Refuah instead, so they wanted to daven to God. And you know, the reality is that a lot of these things were taken away because they turned into Avodah Zarah. They actually turned into a pagan kind of worship. So you can take sometimes something which is religious in its source and it become a non-religious. In fact, you know, Chazal say that Micha was a descendant of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So you have Moshe, which is the person who took us away from Avodah Zarah, and then you have Micha, his descendant, who took us back to Avodah Zarah with the Pesel Micha, one of the worst Avodah Zarahs that we had. So the same way, you know, people can take something good and turn it to something bad. And
the grandson of Moshe, it's alluded to that he is the priest that they brought to
Oh, yeah, I thought it was Micha himself that maybe
it's a, I'm pretty sure it's the grandson of Moshe, and it says Ben Gershom Ben Menashe. There's a small
Yeah, right. So you can still read Moshe Rabbeinu, right?
Rashi says, I read this a long time ago.
Yeah.
Rashi ends up he says that they don't want to disrespect Moshe, so they made a nun there, very small.
To make it very small. So yeah, so it's you know, you see the different level, and that's, I think, you know, one of the things that that we're going to talk about today is also the responsibility of leadership to prevent, you know, these kind of things from happening. The reason why Pesel Micha is such a great example is Shoftim is known for a lack of leadership. That the book of Shoftim, that's why you had Pelegish Pegiva that immediately follows afterwards. So you have this lack of leadership, which allows all these terrible things where almost a tribe gets wiped out. You have, you know, a rape scene, which is horrendous. You have Pesel Micha, which is out of control. In fact, you know, when they came to Pesel Micha, the tribe of Dan, they were going to go to war. And they asked if they were going to be successful, and they were told by this priest that he was going to be successful, and it came true. They were successful. So it ends up, you know, it worked. This is a great Avodah Zarah. Let's make this our own Avodah Zarah, and a wonderful partnership of Avodah Zarah was formed, and reminds us of modern day times, you know, where people follow things and ideas because it worked for one person. You know, it's there's a Gemara that says, I forgot who it was. This Apicarius came out of a base of Avodah Zarah, and he says to this Tana, he says, I don't really believe in Avodah Zarah, but I walked in there, I had a cold, I came out, and I was healed. And the Tana turns to him and says, you would have been healed no matter what. You just now associated it with the Avodah Zarah. In other words, if you would have stayed outside the base of Avodah Zarah, it would have been healed. And I think that's what happens today, where people are, you know, see something, and that thing becomes an Avodah Zarah to them. And a perfect example would be, you know, Pesach. You know, it's interesting because, and especially now with from the Sephardi world, you know, with you know, I grew up when as a kid, we didn't eat gebrachs. You know, that's how machmer were with chametz. And you have kitnios that was thrown out to the Ashkenazic world, and the chumros that you have on Pesach, which is great because now it's Matzah Shur, so you can talk about Pesach. But the chumros that we have on Pesach are astronomical, and matzah and chametz and Pesach is a very important mitzvah, right? Because you have kareis with chametz, but avodah zarah is to me, and not to me, the Rambam says straight out that it's keneged kol ha'Torah kula, kol ha'mitzvos. Is avodah zarah. There's nothing worse than avodah zarah. Avodah zarah is one of the three things you die for. Last time I checked, chametz is not one of the three things you die for. But we're willing to bankrupt the poor and make chumros so that the poor people can't afford to do Pesach. But when it comes to avodah zarah, it seems like we're very makel on it. You know, the rabbis try to find reasons why you should do X, Y, Z. And what's interesting is Pesach is very associated with getting rid of avodah zarah. If you look throughout history, in fact, the mitzvah of Pesach is written right after. If you look in the pasuk in the Torah, avodah zarah and Pesach are written right next to each other. And you had throughout history, you had King Yoshio, Chizkio, that when they got rid of avodah zarah, you always had a carbon Pesach that came along that was associated together with Pesach. So you think Pesach would be a time that, you know, we're going to correct our ways, we're going to get rid of all the outside influences. And then right after Pesach, what's the first thing we do? We take a key that looks like a cross and we put it into a challah. So we have the shlitzel challahs. And to me, it's why are the rabbanim so quiet on this? I mean, it's starting to take off. You go on Facebook, you go on social media. Right after Pesach, all these keys are being put into challahs, and it's really a cross. It looks like a cross. You know, they try to make it into a key so it doesn't look exactly like a cross. But there's no, you know, the Abd Rav, I think, was the first person in the 18th century who introduced this idea, and it took off as a major fad. So why is there silence? Why is there not one Rav coming out and saying, you know what, we got to stop this. This is ridiculous. You know, it's not something that goes back to.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's fear. I think it's also we're living in a Shoftim era. You know, we're living in an era where, ironically, you have the state of Israel, but you have such chaos when it comes to Rabbanim. I think most of them are interested in money. If you look at what's going on in politics, it's how much money can we pull for our people who are learning, which is a whole separate problem. And, you know, I think that they're blinded. You know, they're blinded by following the masses themselves. You know, it's interesting. The Rambam, and this goes back to even Moshe Rabbeinu's times. The Rambam talks about in the beginning of Mor Nevuchim. He talks about the pasuk right at Har Sinai. The Jewish people are surrounding the mountain, and only Atzilei B'nei Yisrael go up on the mountain. That's Tzilei B'nai Yisrael, like the leaders, the elites, right? Including that the pasuk says, who are they? Moshe, Aaron, and, you know, all the top leaders, the Kohanim, the Aaron's sons, and all the top leaders. And it says there in the pasuk that they saw the God, and they saw underneath him was like a sapphire stone. And it says the language of Ayochu Vayishu, they ate and drank. And the Rambam says on that they should have died at that moment, because Vayochu v'yishtu is a negative term. When it says Vayochu v'yishtu, it means they perceive God in a physical way. And as a result of that physical understanding, they should have died, because it's Vayochu v'yishtu. They benefited, physical benefit or mental benefit or philosophical benefit, whatever it is. And the Rambam says they're very interesting. And as a result of that action, they died later on. Because Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for them at Har Sinai that they shouldn't die, and they end up dying later on. And of course, we see when the Chanukas HaMishkan, the Bnei Aaron who died, were one of those Atzilei Bnei Yisrael. I always wondered whether Aaron himself was considered one of Atzilei Bnei Yisrael, because the pasuk doesn't really tell you. It says in the beginning is Aaron, and Aaron made the Egel Hazav, right? So maybe Aaron himself had a flaw in his understanding of God at that moment. Who knows? But we do know the rest of the Atzilei Bnei Yisrael were involved in this misunderstanding of God. And the question is, the Rambam says that they did something. What is it that they did? There's something that they did as a result of this false philosophy. So I thought about it, and if you look at the Psukim, right after this story of the Atzilut B'nai Yisrael is a Ma'aseh Egel. And Aaron goes and he creates this Egel, and it says, Vayomru, and they said, this is Elokei Yisrael, this is the God of Israel. Who's they? The Torah leaves it very quiet. So Rashi says, Erev, I think some of the Rashi says, Erev. I say, it's the Atzilut B'nai Yisrael. It's the same Atzilut B'nai Yisrael that saw a physical God on Har Sinai turn to the Egel Hazav and said, this is our God. The same God that we saw on the mountain is right here now, right? And what's interesting is it says at the end of the Pasuk is they ate and drank. So by the Egel Hazav, it says the same language as V'ochu V'shosu, I think it says. They ate and drank. And that is sort of like a connection between the two. When you have eating and drinking, when you see God, that there's a problem. So to answer your question, I think people are eating and drinking when they see God today. I think a lot of the leadership, either themselves are not philosophically developed, they're very well versed in halacha, very well versed in understanding of Pshat Gemara, Briska Torah. But when it comes to philosophy, they're afraid to think about philosophy. If it's not Musar, if it's not Mesilas Yesharim, they're free to think about anything to read a Maor Nevuchim is God forbid. The fact that the Mishnah Torah at the end of major halachos, the Rambam talks philosophically, right? Like by mezuzah, right? Hilchos mezuzah, Rambam says that the mezuzah, tefillin, right, and tzitzis are a reminder for us not to sin, right? When you walk into the house and you touch the mezuzah, it reminds you not to sin. So that concept is a philosophical concept because it says these are the malachim that protect you. So I think that the rabbis today don't look at that. They're busy with fixing the letters of the mezuzah so that you should have good mazel. It's a different.
It's not just even in Mor Nevuchim, even in something as basic and foundational as what do you call Chovat HaLevavot? They
Right.
don't read the first parak, like
Right.
community,
Push philosophy.
which philosophy. It's a big. This is, and we're talking about Rosh
Right.
Yeshivas. We're talking about people that devote their entire day and lives, and sincerely, right?
Right.
They're really like devoting their lives. Like you said, they're well versed in halacha and Gemara, and but there it's almost like philosophy has become
The book,
illegal. It's
it's the
illegal in
boogeyman.
the yeshiva world. It's
Right.
illegal. And look, I've been in yeshiva for a long time. Not a long time, I shouldn't say that. But look, after high school, I was in the yeshiva circle for a good 7 years, let's call it. Okay? Many different yeshivot. I had great experience. I love my rabbanim. I loved learning. I still love learning all that. But I remember clearly there is a, what's the word? Cognitive dissonance, maybe? Is that the
Yeah.
right word? Okay. So it was very apparent to me. And I was actually not coming from a Maimonidean standpoint, not at that time. I was actually coming just from an actually even more mystical standpoint.
Right.
I'm coming from the opposite end, okay? But on my opposite end, it also bothered me. Meaning,
Right.
I was seeing that there was really nothing outside of Halacha and Gemara. There's nothing that they can't offer. Meaning, when I wanted to go to my mystical world, I had to do that on my own, right?
Right.
They weren't. Meaning, I'm trying to say that yes, I'm coming from the different angle back then, but it's really the same thing. The idea that halacha, learning Gemara, is championed, but everything else, especially philosophy, completely, it's just not in the vocabulary. It's not in the
Not
lexicon.
only that, even
Not in the
halacha.
curriculum. Not even in the Rosh Yeshivas.
I'll take it a step further. Even halacha, I'll give you an example. During COVID or during a war in Israel, what do we do in shul? The rabbi gets up there and he goes, let's say Tehillim. Any rabbi who half thinks knows the Rambam. The Rambam says straight out that if you say Tehillim for someone who is sick or someone else who is in harm, you are an apikoros. You're a pure Abikaris, because Tehillim is Refuas HaGuf. It's not Refuas HaGuf, it's Refuas HaNefesh. It's a halacha. The Rambam brings it down as a halacha in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim, Perek Yud Aleph. He says there, if you want to say Tehillim for yourself because you're going to a dangerous situation, then mutar, you're allowed to. It's not a mitzvah, you're allowed to. You go to every shul today, you would think saying Tehillim for someone who's sick is the biggest mitzvah in the world. These Rabbanim, you know, and by the way, I gave a share on this multiple times, and I had uproars. People were so upset. They were saying, how could you say this? We all say Tehillim. I say, guys, look at the Shulchan Aruch. He agrees with the Rambam. Look at all the Achronim. They all agree with the Rambam. Unless you go to some far out mystical source, halacha dictates that you can't say Tehillim for the sick. But you have Tehillim clubs. You have women getting together in Tehillim clubs. We're the rabbis.
WhatsApp groups. Tehillim WhatsApp groups.
Exactly. WhatsApp group. But where's the leadership? So the problem you have is the same uproar I got when I said that. A rabbi would be thrown out on his butt because he'd be shaking up their world, because their world is like saying that Pesel Micha is no longer is. How can you say it's Avodah Zarah? It's a minhag avosenu b'yadenu. Get him out of here. You know, throw this rabbi out.
What would you say? What would you say to those who are going to obviously make this case, which they do all the time? They make the argument from authority and say, "Who are you to question the Gedolei Israel today?" Right? Who are you to, you know better than so and so rabbi? And
yes, there's a Gemara I just did in Daf Yomi. One I just did. You know, that's the problem when you do Daf Yomi. Just is like 20 blot is just, you know, flies by in a second. But there's a Gemara that says, where is it? Let me just find it for you. I thought it was a great Gemara. It's a famous Gemara too. It says Agrippa Samelech, right? During Hakel cried when the Pasuk was read that a foreign king cannot be placed on the throne. And the Gemara there says that the Jewish people were punished. Why? Because Chazal praised Agrippa Samelech. They come, oh, no, don't worry. You know, you're a great king. Don't feel bad. They tried to console him. And the Jewish people were punished. So the responsibility of leadership is that, you know, if you don't act, you're responsible for the worst of all. You know, if a guy eats, God forbid, you know, chametz on Pesach because you gave the wrong hechsher. Okay, that's one thing. You know, you can live with that. It was an accident or a shogeg. If you go ahead and allow people to be oved avodah zarah, you have people doing the wrong thing. It's on your head.
They can't even fathom that the gedolim could even make mistakes. So
right, but that's part of the flaw of the education. That's exactly it. And you know why? The rabbis encourage that. Because if the rabbis, you know, encourage this kind of thinking, then when you're a rabbi, you have ultimate power, right? Anything you say goes. So if you're a rabbi in Israel, especially in Israel today, and you're a political figure and you're trying to raise money for your yeshivas and you're trying to tell them who to vote for, right? You want to control the masses.
There's a major conflict of interest there.
Yes,
of course. And that's exactly the problem, is that you're creating a system that feeds upon itself. It's vayochlu v'yishku, right? You're taking a system that benefits, you know, it's no longer about me getting close to God. It's now about me benefiting. It's been now, how do I eat and drink so that I contain my power, I contain my following? And in fact, the more I tell these people that if you give tzedakah, you're gonna be healed from an illness, or the more I tell you to do X, Y, Z, the more power I have, right?
And what would you say to those who will acknowledge that maybe rabbis could make some mistakes? Obviously, we believe that, but what would you say to them, to those who say that it's not that the rabbis have make mistakes, but maybe the things that you're saying are avodah zarah aren't actually avodah zarah, meaning that you are just maybe reading into it too much.
Right. The problem is, I'll give you an example. You know, we just finished Masechta Nazir. Well, we actually did finish in Sota, but Nazir came before that. And one of the things that the Torah looks upon that is considered holy is staying away from the dead, right? staying away from the dead is what the Torah, if you want to be a Kohen, you can't come in contact with the dead. If you want to do the Avodah, you can't come in contact. If you want to go to the base of Mikdash and get close to God, you want to go to the Kotel, right? You can't come in contact with the dead. All of a sudden, coming in contact with the dead is the biggest mitzvah you could do. Go to Meron, go to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, going to all these kvarim is the most wonderful thing to do. It's Judaism. Meanwhile, the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah and Hilchos Teshuvah says that if you want to be an apikoros, you daven to an intermediary, right? So people say, oh no, we're not davening to the dead. We're asking the dead to intercede for us, to God, right? Or the schus of the dead to intercede. But the Rambam says, right in Perek Beis in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, that you're not allowed to go through an intermediary to pray to God. That's what Enosh did in the beginning. That people would pray to intermediaries. In fact, you're a complete apikoros if you do go to an intermediary. And yet, rabbis allow it. Why? Because it's a source of, I believe, of holding on to, you know, in other words, if you're going to go and say, you can't do this, then you're the radical rabbi. Then you're the rabbi on the fringe. So you'll have the, you know, either the ultra-modern Orthodox shul that's a progressive, you know, on the edge, or you're going to be with a minion of 10 people. You know, you're not going to have the big masses that you're looking for.
So it seems like what you're saying is that certain trends sort of evolved and the rabbis kind of just
went with the flow.
Went with the flow.
Right.
And that kind of makes sense to me. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. And what do you attribute that to? Do you think that's because of the Kabbalistic influence on Judaism?
Sure. I mean, look, first of all, look at the literature world today. They're totally influenced by the Hasidic world. I mean, you look at Breslov, the influence Breslov has on the neo-Hasidism, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing because it's simple. I don't have to learn. I don't have to be an intellectual. I can say magical words. I can go to the kever and I can have a party. You know, I can stay up for Shavuos night. You guys learned, but you see what goes on in some of these lectures with buffets, especially in the five towns, more than here in Teaneck. But in the five towns, it was crazy when I was there with parties that were going on. It's fun. That's fun, Judy. But Yochel V'Yishku again.
It becomes a sorority of sorts.
Yeah, it becomes a sorority. It becomes a club. And, you know, you can dance with guys and sing and in front of a bonfire. But forget about the fact that, you know, bonfires are celebrated by, I was funny, I did a Wikipedia search on Lag BaOmer, just that was my activity for Lag BaOmer, to see how many bonfires are going on around the world. So every religion in the world from like April, you know, 15th, yes. May 1st have witch night and all these different things where they do bonfires. So forget the fact that
It's saint worship in the Christian.
Saint worship, right. It's witch night, saint worship, and all these different holidays that we're following in their footsteps. Forget about that fact. I'm a Litvak. I love this Hasidic concept of making the bonfire with the bows and arrows, and I'm shooting the devils, whatever witches that I'm doing. And now it's fun. It's a lot of fun because I'm having a party. It's a lot more easy to do that than to open up a Rambam or to open up a halacha and say, okay, how do I get close to God? It's a lot easier to dive into a God that I'm going to manipulate, and he's going to do what I want him to do for me because I'm saying some magical words of Tehillim or whatever it is, than it is to say, what is it that God that I'm praying to? Who is this God I'm praying to?
It's more about what feels right versus what is right.
Yeah. Correct. It's all about emotion. And that's what Avodah Zarah is, by the way. It's all about emotion. It's pure.
You know, people always say, like, you know, this Maimonidean approach, it's all intellectualism. And like, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly it. It's about using your brain, your God-given brain. What makes us human? It's our...
Right. You know what it is? It's funny because someone said to me once, the Rambam is very dry. And I don't know if you ever read Marvin Fox.
I have the book. I want to read it. I haven't opened it up yet.
Yeah, I just gave it to my father to read again. It's Interpreting Maimonides, is the book. And it's almost like a Rashi, Amor Nevuchim. If you want to, you know, if someone had to write a Rashi, Amor Nevuchim, he really goes through it and takes apart multiple different pieces really nicely. And I was reading it, and I said to myself, Maria, I said, this is very heavy reading. You know, it's like, it's not easy reading. It's not something you're going to open up on a plane or on a bus and read. It's you really got to be focused in. But there are moments when you're reading the book and you get into like this mental ecstasy because And I'm sure you guys see this too, when you read something and you go, wow. And you get like to, and when you get, and if you do it right before davening and you get in and you get to daven, the whole davening experience becomes no longer about, changing God or giving me what I need. It becomes like, oh my God, I'm praying to this deity that I'm never ever going to understand, never gonna, Atta Kadosh is, you're completely separate from anything that we have on this world. There's nothing that I can compare you to. And yet, look at this wonderful world. Look at this incredible existence. It's a state of ecstasy, but it's not an emotional ecstasy that you start off with. It starts off with an intellectual, and it gets you to this ecstasy where the prayer becomes a much more meaningful prayer. Versus the guy who leaves the prayer, Rafaeinu Hashem Elokeinu, and then his relative dies, ends up at the next prayer of what the hell? I gave you everything I gave God and you still kill them. You know what I mean? It's like it's a whole different relationship. When people ask how did the Holocaust happen, it's because they don't understand what God is. God doesn't create the Holocaust. Man creates the Holocaust. We dive into God in order that we change man, change ourselves, so that we don't make another Holocaust. But to blame God that he made a Holocaust means you don't understand what you're praying to, right? So I had friends of mine who used to say to me, well, God allowed a Holocaust to happen. How can it be a God? He says, well, you're davening to a different God than I daven to. Your definition of God is different than my definition of God, I had a roommate on my kibbutz who was an atheist. And every day I'd walk into my room and after work, and he'd be arguing with me about God. I said, you believe God more than me. You talk about him 24/7. So I said, so sometimes, the religious guy is not really religious, and the atheist is very religious. So it's just a matter of perspective. But I think that there's to go back to what you're saying about the leadership. Leadership is comfortable. Why? I'm a Rosh Hashiva. I'm a I'm most Rosh Hashivas today are not Rosh Soloveitchik. I'm reading now. Chakira just came out with another journal, and I'm reading Soloveitchik's letter, Ishurim, that's in the Chakira. It's a little promotion for Chakira there, but it's phenomenal. I mean, Soloveitchik was not following the masses. The masses were following him. You don't have that today because leadership is so afraid that they're going to be thrown out, they're going to be ostracized. If if you argue if you, th that science is comes first, that the world really isn't 5,000 and change years old, really the world is billions of years old, then you get put into cherem, right? Well, what's a guy, Slifkin, right? He gets put into cherem, and he's arguing with a Rosh Hashiva who's a physicist, who's saying that you don't follow science. It's mind-boggling. It's a chil Hashem, because what ends up happening is the youth today that are growing up have cell phones, have computers, they follow science, they know science. In fact, they know the physicist rabbi who doesn't believe in science. When he gets sick, he's going straight to a hospital where they use a science that he doesn't believe in to try to heal him, right? And yet they laugh, they make fun, like I do, of these people. And what ends up happening, a lot of them say, this is not Judaism, I don't have nothing to do with it. So a lot of these leaders are responsible for people leaving Judaism. And I think it's a very serious problem. I think you need to have a leader that is not going to be vayochu v'yishtu, that doesn't eat and drink, that means doesn't benefit from the religion. He's doing this truly l'shem shamayim, and he gets up there and he puts an end to it. It's funny because I was looking at Lag BaOmer and all the Minhagim Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer itself became this major holiday, and it didn't exist hundreds and hundreds of years ago. There were if you go all the way back to the Gaoni Eretz Yisrael, they believed there was a day Yehoshua died. So no one celebrated Lag BaOmer because someone died. Unless you're a Christian, you celebrate Jesus' death. Most Jews don't celebrate when someone dies. So it's just, that's why is a rabbi going to say?
Yeah, the whole thing is really centered around Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, based on the mythology that he wrote the Zohar, and he's it becomes this kind of like sideshow like foreign fire, you know, this whole
Right.
it echoes kind of the whole, you mentioned before, the story of our own sons. It's like this extra zealousness towards God. We're going to show you, and we're going to be really, really passionate about this bonfire. It's just so weird. It's strange. It's a
Not only
strange.
that, but Shimon Yochai dying on Lag BaOmer is a misprint in one of Chaim Vital's books.
You had this in your Facebook page.
Yeah, I had this on a Facebook page.
Yes,
It's actually a
I'll come.
misprint. Is that
Yes.
it's a misprint that they said that it's a day that he died when it's supposed to be it's a day of celebration. So it's a misprint on these words that turned it into the day that he died. So it didn't even happen. And the funny thing I always said to people is, let's say you believe that it happened. Let's say you believe the misprint, right, of the book, and you're going to celebrate based on the misprint. Why would you celebrate the day a guy dies? Where in Judaism do you celebrate when someone dies? You celebrate the day he's born, but why would you celebrate a death day? To me, that's, mind-boggling.
And also, you mentioned earlier, we were talking about, how the priests aren't allowed to go near the dead, and the Torah wants us to stay away from the dead. And Moshe says, choose good, life and good versus death,
Right.
right? And then the Ralbag, and I think Chizkuni also mentioned that we don't know the place or exact place where Moshe is buried because it will turn into a shrine for worship.
Or the Zara. In
Right.
fact, the funny thing is, this I was just, I do Kehelas every day. I love Kehelas. It's one of my favorite books. So just this week, I was up to a pasuk. I said, oh, this is perfect for the podcast. It's Ki Achayim Yoidim Shiyamusu. The knowing know, the dead, living know they're going to die. And the
Right.
dead know nothing. They know nothing. They ain't lehem schar. They are no longer schar ki nishkach zichron because they're forgotten. Because most dead people, right? You're supposed to leave. You're not supposed to come back. The Rambam says you bury somebody, you leave. You don't come back. The way you remember tzaddikim are their deeds and their books that they write. So it's interesting. Kehelas goes on. Gam havasam, gam sinasam. Even their love, they don't know who their relatives are when they're dead. They don't remember their children, their grandchildren. Gam Sinasim, they don't even know the people they hated, right? Gam Kinasim, even the people they were jealous of, they forget. Kfar Avad, everything is lost. Bechelek Ein Lehem Oid LeOlam, they no longer have a portion on this world at all. They have nothing to do with this. And yet people go to the Kavarim saying, oh, help us, oh, please be an intermediary. But they're dead. They know nothing that's going on. And to me, it's mind-boggling that there's silence on leadership. Silence. It's
But
amazing.
what people will do is that they'll find like agadot, maybe obscure agadot in the Gemara, and then they'll just say, well, look here, Tanit 16a or whatever, there's kind of an indication that it's okay to pray by the graves of tzaddikim, so obviously there's conflicting
Yeah, but the problem is that you have a pasuk, you have a Rambam that a halacha that says you not, and we know this halacha from the Gemara that you're not allowed to see Divrei Torah by a base kvaros, you're not allowed to wear tefillin, you're not allowed to go ahead and daven by a base kvaros, you're not allowed to do Divrei Torah there of any sort, you're not even supposed to wear your tzitzis around the base kvaros. So all these things are mentioned in the Gemara and mentioned as codified as a halacha, and it's codified in Shulchan Aruch, and it's not something. And you're going to take an agada. I mean, that's what the Sanma Hasidim don't believe in Medinas Yisrael from an agada. There's agada that says you don't go back to Israel until Mashiach comes. You don't start a government. It's agada. It's a
It has to be deeper than that, though. I can't believe that it's just an agada that sprung forth this entire thing. It has to be something deeper
Well, I
going
think also
on. Pure agada. There's nothing else
it could be
they're
just
basing
the
it on.
agada itself.
No, it could be the
There has to
Agadah.
be a deeper point
Well,
here that, in from their perspective, or maybe what I'm saying is something subconscious going on.
probably that the seculars really had a hand in, making Israel. That probably has a lot
Okay.
to do with it.
The funny thing is, I was thinking about this also. I'm going back to Lag BaOmer. They think some people say that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva were part of the army or Shimon ben Yochai. So you have all these Hasidim
Bar Kokhba, you mean? Bar Kokhba.
and Bar Kochba. Sorry, I'm not sure you read Bar Kochba. Were part of the army of Bar Kochba. And what's funny about that is, I'm thinking all these Hasidim and Haredim are dancing. And they would never go to the army. So celebrating the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva who left the yeshiva to go to the army. Why didn't Talmidei Rabbi Akiva just say, you know, we're going to learn in yeshiva, Bar Kocha will be fine because our Torah will save them from the battle?
Well, even celebrating Hanukkah makes no sense.
Right. Exactly. The whole
why recapture?
Yeah, why would you go to war against the Greeks?
Exactly. Let them happen until Mashiach comes.
Who's going to save them?
Yeah. Wait for Mashiach to come and then go back. No.
But exactly. The whole philosophy is backwards. Yeah. In those days, they did a good job. Nowadays, Chas v'Shalom, we got to learn that the Torah is going to protect. And by the way, that in itself is the voodoo Judaism that we're talking about. Because take this to another level. If Torah is magical, if me saying Tehillim is magical, then learning Torah is magical. And it's going to save the Israeli government, which they don't support, right? Which is kind of ironic. We're learning Torah to support the government that we don't support. So it's kind of an irony that they tell everyone in Israel, well, we're learning Torah, we're protecting you, even though we don't want to protect you, but we're protecting you with our Torah. Even though we hold that this government is a terrible, horrible government that should be destroyed, we're going to learn Torah to protect you. So to me, the whole thing is backwards, but it's tied into this mystical thinking. And to me, you know, what's the worst part of this? Yeah, I think half these people are Eved Avodah Zarah. They go to Uman or go to, you know, Maron. What they're doing is real idol worship in modern day Judaism. And the other problem you have is that you're losing Jewish people, because the youth of today, especially in the modern Orthodox world, and even the Hasidic world and the Black Eye, if you have half a brain, and you start thinking, wait a minute, God needs me to say these magical words so that I'm going to save, you know, someone from an illness, or it's going to make me matzliach. This is the God I pray to.
God becomes very petty.
God is like almost like all these other gods. Like, what's the difference between this and Jesus? You know, why is
that? Even the pagan gods of like the ancient or the Greek ancient gods or whatever it is that you're Egyptian gods. It's kind of like this. You know, gumball machine in the sky. You just
right.
Hit a button and then it comes out.
And if he doesn't give me what I want, I'm gonna just go to another god. You know, I'll just find another god that will give me what I want. So it's really horrific what's happening today, and it's happening in an age and era where science rules. You know, where math and science is so advanced, where Judaism could be a leader of it. We could be a light unto the nations in the sense that if we take a rational approach, we could be that one religion that's different than all other religions. Right now, we're the same as all other religions when it comes. We have mitzvos, great, but philosophically, we're following.
Fundamentally, it's the same as ever.
Same thing, yeah. And to me, it's the rabbanim and leadership today are totally responsible. Totally responsible.
And the leaders are becoming increasingly more mystically minded, even in the literature world. With now the Yanuka thing,
yeah.
Now. Now the Gdolim that we're getting are starting to synthesize, you know, Hasidic teachings within
even YU,
right? Which is hot, which is really
progressively
scary.
Getting scarier and scarier.
It is, and it, what ends up happening is it supports, you know, the type of things that we see going on in Israel. And you know, I always have this argument. I was in Kol Torah. I used to argue with one of my chavruses. I said, I understand you don't want to go to the army, but share it with me. Why do you go to hospitals, go to nursing homes? Well, Gemil Chasadim, how is it that learning Torah takes the place of Gemil Chasadim? If you're...
They'll say Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam.
But the halacha is that, you know, when it comes to, you know, if you have Torah without Maisa, it's worthless. So if you're learning Torah and you have an opportunity, and you don't have to take up the whole
Talmud
day.
Talmud Torah is greater than deeds because you don't know what deeds to, because it leads to the deeds.
Exactly. The action.
But if you cut out the...
What you have to Torah with Maisa. If Torah without Maisa is nothing, right? That's what it means, you know, that when it says, Derech Eretz Kadmo Torah, Derech Eretz means... To go into first of all to get a job according to the Rambam, but Derech Eretz also means to be involved in doing, you know, things that are helpful to society, and so to go ahead and to say, you know what, I'm going to learn 8 hours a day. I'm going to 4 hours of the day. I'm going to do work in a nursing home or a hospital. You know, do some form of Shere Lumi. They won't even do that because
they're just learning all day and getting money from the government or donors.
Right, which is again a problem halachically, right? Which now I know the Ramesha and they're all going to point to different gedolim and say Eislas or Hashem b'farat Torasecha, but you don't give chemotherapy after the person's healed. I understand right after the war it was Eislas Hashem, you had to build up Torah. Right now, 30% of the country is learning Torah. It is no longer Eislas Hashem. It's Eislas Hashem to get people back to work. It's Eislas Hashem to get people to the army. Or to do Sheir Lumi, something that's service, but it all comes from mystical thinking. If it all comes from this world of mysticism.
And also we see from like a societal level how it act like people are not educated in secular subjects at all, which you
Right.
increasingly getting harder and harder to get jobs if you live in a
A bubble.
if you live in a bubble, especially if you even if you live in like a Western society or the norm, it's still very hard with artificial intelligence and everything becoming more advanced, and they're not even like learning like English. And
Yeah.
they're learning Torah all day, and they're getting married, and they're poor, and they're turning their children into beggars. And probably, I think, what is it, 20,
This
25%
is
of
not going to end
Israel,
well. This
it's
is
not
not
going to
going to
end
end.
well.
And then, by the way, then you come back to Pesach and you put all the chumras of Pesach on these poor guys who can't make a living. And so now they got to schnorr more to be able to make a Pesach, to even keep a basic mitzvah. But, at the end of the day, that's Israel. In America, you have a bigger problem because in America, I found when I look around Teaneck and I look around the youth of today, there's this, especially modern Orthodox, there's a massive fleeing of Orthodoxy. And that's because when people are told that this is what Judaism is, you really have a hard time distinguishing. There's only so much that Mussar is going to make you feel good. You go in and you hear a Mussar speech, or you hear, and a lot of rabbis today are very focused in on Mussar. They're raised on Mussar. Their sermons are based on Mussar. It's all nice and dandy. At the moment, it's feel good. Now you leave the shul and you have to daven, you have to learn. What's it all about? Is this all like voodoo? Is this all going to be? I mean, come on, I have a job. I'm a lawyer. I'm a scientist. I work as a doctor. It doesn't make sense. This is what my Judaism is all about. So you're not giving people a choice. You're not giving them the rational approach. And so they leave. A lot of people are leaving because it makes no sense. And it's scary. It's sad to see.
There are institutions that do give me hope. Ma'ale Adumim, Birkat Moshe, you have Har Etzion.
Right.
Those places, not only the
Sadar Rav Kook.
what?
Sadar Rav Kook,
No, those places are giving quality Torah, but they're also they are pushing to go to the army. They're pushing working. They're pushing. So, they're not taking over necessarily the Haredi world, which
creating their own entity. It's a new
they're their
entity.
own entity. So,
New entity.
but as a offshoot, that gives me a lot of hope.
It does in Israel, but in America, we're in trouble.
America, we're in trouble.
In America, we're in a real gahak tzaras, as they say.
No, it's interesting. In anybody who's anyone who could probably relate to this, but like quietly, we have conversations about like things are a little bit awkward with Chabad, for example. Okay, they're
Right.
awkward because no one wants to really speak about the elephant in the room.
Right.
You all love them; they're all nice people. They're
You have
missionaries.
restaurants wherever you go.
Wherever you go,
Yeah, they really do good
and they
things.
do good things. And I wish most Jews were as devoted, to God as they are to their rabbi, right?
Right.
But
But
the
what do you
thing is,
mean, God as rabbi? I thought the rabbi was God.
but the thing is, you can't even talk about it. You can't even
Right.
talk about these things. And then the thing that they'll say is that you can't call me a kofar because I believe in this person as the Messiah, because it's not necessarily kfirah and all that. It
Right.
goes beyond that, obviously. We don't need to get into that. I'm just giving you an example of like the things that rabbis won't even talk about today because it might get a bad reaction from people. The average person, they don't want to ruffle any feathers. They think all is good. It's like a very hippie approach. Like, yeah, it's all love, it's all good.
Everything is good. Every approach is good. Everybody's good.
It's
As
all
long as your heart is with God, everything's
right.
fine.
That's exactly a problem. That's a major problem. And it was funny in Israel, by the way, when I was in Kol Torah, I had a poor Chabadnik there. He was taken apart by the yeshiva. The Israelis in the Haredi world don't look fondly on Chabad. They look at it as it is. They look at it as pure apikoresis. But to me, what's funny is that there, a lot of the Haredi world is not better off these days. They sort of, they're doing their own thing, where, they're not Chabad, but they're behaving in similar ways. When they go to Uman, when they go to all these things, why are they any better than Chabad? Now, a lot of the Haredi world, a lot of yeshiva world, does not go to Uman, does not go to these places. That's the truth. But then you have flaws, like we were talking about them learning all day and not going to the army or not doing it, because they also believe in this mystical concept that Torah is magical. It's going to save the world if we just sit and learn Torah.
Well, it's not just that. It's the tzaddik, right? The Rebbe,
Rosh Hashiva.
infallible. Rosh
Yeah.
Hashiva is infallible.
No, he's a pipeline, and so therefore true salvation
Right.
can only come through him, not through external,
Right.
means.
But
Not
he,
necessarily Torah in Hasidic world. They're actually not big on learning Torah.
Right.
That's not the point.
In the yeshiva world, it is Torah. And
Yeah,
in
in the
yeshiva
yeshiva
world,
world, the Torah in the yeshiva world functions like the tzaddik in the Hasidic world.
right, exactly, and it then becomes magical in a sense, especially when with the army situation. In America, we're lost because, like you said, Chabad is everything's an excuse. Every time you talk to somebody in the yeshiva world today, they come up with an excuse of why it's okay to do this. Why is it? Well, it's like Omer, it's a Shem Shemayim. They're doing
Apologetics.
this. Yeah, the Rambam says if you build a matzeva to worship God, it says in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, you build a matzeva to worship God, you chayav avodah zarah. It's avodah zarah. You're not allowed to go ahead and build a matzeva even to worship God. So you go to Maron, you go to all these matzevas everywhere. You go to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, there's a matzeva there, right? So if you build a monument of sorts to go and pray to God, it's prohibited. And in America, they do it. They do it in Israel. They do it everywhere.
There's a
How is it
Gemara, there's a Yerushalmi that also mentions that, like, you can't build a mausoleum for a great person, for a, some type of monument for a great person. I don't remember exactly where, but I could find the source after this. But
Yeah,
anyway,
the commentary codifies it. He says that when great people, you don't even put a big monument there because their deeds and actions are their memory. So
exactly.
you
That's
don't
the
need to go ahead. The Rambam says it actually in Hilchos Avel. He says when you bury a tzaddik, you don't need to put anything there. There's nothing. You go to Chassidish Rebbe, there's oil, there's a whole thing. I would say the guy must have been not that great because they built a whole monument according to the Rambam. And so I was
But that's
like,
another example of cognitive dissonance, because there's like
Right.
Rambam Yomi learning,
Right.
but like
It gets glossed
it's
over.
not penetrating. Not
okay.
penetrating. Right.
I mean,
What do they see when they read the halacha? What do they see when they say you can't say Tehillim? What I don't understand. What do they say when you can't have an intermediary? And the Rambam says it. How do they ignore the halacha, the learning? And this is not Maariv Avuchim. This is in the Mishneh Torah itself, the halachic book. And the Shulchan Aruch and many of the other Achronim come by and
well, I know
they
that regarding Dorash HaLemetim, they'll point and say specifically that Dorash HaLemetim, the way the Rambam brings it, it's only when you get answered back.
True, but the Rambam says straight out that you're not allowed to go ahead and pray or learn Torah by a cemetery or Beis HaKvaros. You can't do anything religious by Beis HaKvaros. What you're supposed to do is bury the person, and then he says you should leave and not come back. So, in fact, what's fascinating is the Rambam says on Tainis, when he talks about Hilchos Tainis, he says you should go to a Beis HaKvaros. But it doesn't have to be a Jewish Beis HaKvaros, because the Rambam holds the reason why you're going to a Beis HaKvaros is to remind yourself where you're heading, not to pray to the dead.
And by the way, there are some who believe that he is answering them back through letters. They're writing actual
Yeah,
notes. And
but besides that technicality, it's giving that kind of answer, in my opinion, it's just you're simply not processing
the
the
point.
point.
The point.
The point here is not how you can get away with doing it and figuring out the technicality of why
Oh,
I'm
yeah, you have another problem.
over on Dorash HaLemetim because of that technicality.
Yeah, but the Rambam
The
says
reason
that
why
you're
we're not
a...
supposed to be Dorash HaLemetim is because it's false.
Yeah,
Right.
but not only that, the Rambam says you're a kofer if you use an intermediary, right? So
Yeah.
if you go to a basic pharos and you put a piece of paper, they say, no, we're not praying to the dead person. The excuse that they give is we're using them as an intermediary. We want their schusim to benefit us, to change God's mind and take care of us. That's an intermediary. That's a avodah zarah. The Rambam says you're a kofer. So how do you get around that? Forget about if the answer is if you're Darshan Mason, You're worse. You're even a Vaidazara.
You know, I know people who will go to like a medium or like a psychic kind of a fortune teller kind of person.
Right.
And there's religious versions of that too, you know.
Right.
But they'll go to that saying that, no, it's real. It's real. It's a real thing. The Torah doesn't deny that it's real. Right, right. But no, but they'll even say like, the Torah doesn't deny that it's real. And I say to them, I said, you know, the Torah also says that do not take other gods before me. That doesn't mean that other gods exist.
Right, right.
The Torah says that something is in the category of
prohibited.
Right, prohibition. It's a sheker. It's based in sheker. So we don't.
Right. And that's what the Rambam says, by the way. He says all these things at the end of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. There's all these things that we're talking about, the seers, the people who talk to the dead, or the intermediaries, all these things that people believe in, including magic, is all nonsense. It's hevel havalim. He says only the fools follow this stuff, that believe in this stuff. So you know, and that's a little bit different than the Ramban. You know, the Ramban said that this stuff, you know, there's some powers to this stuff. It's a power of the Goyim. Again, in the Ramban's day and age, he lived when magic was science. So to him, to tell him that, you know, magic is not science, is to tell him that electricity doesn't exist. But we know today that it's all like the Rambam. It's all nonsense.
Well, ask something. What is the difference between a miracle and magic to you?
So I, you know, I said this to once to a friend of mine. I said, you know, the miracle that takes place. Let's say take Kriyas Yamsuf, right? Kriyas Yamsuf happening is not the miracle.
The timing.
It's the Navi knowing Kriyas Yamsuf. That's the Kriyas Yamsuf would have happened if the Jewish people would have been still Mitzrayim. Kriyas Yamsuf would have happened.
Right. Chazal talks about how certain things were built into the creation, meaning
into nature itself.
They were troubled by, you know, because the idea of miracles, the way we understand it, something supernatural changing the way things work.
God changing.
It would be God changing. It would be a problem of saying that God is kind of fixing things after the fact. Like, uh-oh, there's a glitch in the system. I got to fix it.
Right. So, exactly. Like, I mean, there are people who say there was a volcano erupted, you know, at the time of Egypt, and that volcano caused the animals, the wild animals, and the water to turn red. And
domino effect.
Domino effect. So who knows? Maybe, you know, you can explain this all by science that it happened. The miracle is not that. The miracle is that Moshe Rabbeinu knew this and used this information via tapping into divine intellect, you know, by connecting via Nevuah, whatever that means. There's a whole separate discussion. And using that knowledge to create a nation, a Jewish nation. So to me, the miracle is not the act that happened. The miracle is the knowledge so that you can use that to rescue a nation and create a Jewish nation. So that's a miracle. Magic is, you know, let me do X, Y, Z, and I'm going to cure you from your disease. I'm going to lechesh alamaka. I'm going to do something that's going to make you. And by the way, the Rambam would probably hold that modern day magicians would be prohibited, because if magic is not real, so the act of illusions going to a magic show would probably be problematic, according to the Rambam.
Well, although many of them but will aren't say they, that it's a show, it's not real.
Yeah, like they're not actually saying that. No one, magicians today, I think it's like.
No, some do. Really? Like Uri Geller still maintains that he bends spoons with his mind.
That's yeah, okay, fine. Yeah.
It's kind of like a gray area where it is. Because that would be the difference, is because the Rambam holds this all nonsense anyway. The problem is fooling people and then taking people to make them believe in it, which will lead you to Avodah Zarah. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy who's a Mokobo, who tells you that he can figure out how to cure your disease, is pure Avodah Zarah, because he's one of those Menachshim. He's not talking to God and God is going to change his mind and heal your disease. You know, that's Avodah Zarah, the concept. To bribe God is Avodah Zarah.
And it's a built-in, like, they have a fail-safe for everything, because they could tell you one thing. And you know what? Like you said earlier in the podcast, you said someone goes somewhere and then they get cured when they come out, right? There's a Gemara that talks about that, and
right.
They think, wow, it's that thing that caused me to get cured. So when they go to Mikubal, if like 30 or 40% of the time someone actually, just based on the law of averages,
it's good. It's
better, we'll always attribute it to that. And also there's something to placebos and all that, but people will attribute that to the Mikubal. And the Mikubal, if he does get something wrong, you know, and then he says you're going to have a, you know, child, and that person never has a child for whatever reason, he can always rely on the fact that your prayers weren't strong enough, or the ayin hara on you is too
something
strong.
Wrong.
Right, the ayin hara on you is too strong, so I need to do more prayers. You know, it's always just
always something. And it was funny because going back to Shlissel Challah, you know, there's a Christian religious process where they put a cross in the bread, also around Pesach, right after Pesach time. Some guy in Poland probably saw this cross in the bread, you know, and he saw the guy won the lottery or something. And he said, wait a minute, so this thing really works. How do I make this into a Jewish custom so it works for me, you know? So that's where the key and the challah probably came around.
He's also used to come in the shape of a cross.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. That's exactly what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it took off like crazy. It's insane how if you go
on. I remember it as a kid, though. I think it's become.
Oh, it's recent. It's recent.
Instagram influencers.
Yeah. Many of us seem to be a Dano. In 100 years from now, they go, oh, no, you can't take away the Shlissel Challah. It's a must. It's part of the Yadeno. And to me, it's a built in on the whole Jewish following. You know, when you follow Judaism as a mystical, magical, you know, belief versus a more rational approach of fixing myself, making myself a better person by getting close to God. This is the Judaism you create here in America, where you lose your youth. Your youth are leaving. They're laughing at these rabbis. When a rabbi who's a physicist is saying that you don't follow science, he just lost half his crowd. You know, half his crowd is saying, whoa, this guy is crazy. I mean, has he fly a plane? Has he drive a car? You know, has he not believe in physics when the same physics runs the MRI machine? So, and then you have in Israel, a bunch of guys who are sitting and learning because they believe the Torah is doing magic. So you have this really depressing situation, both in Israel and America. And what you have is, you know, small pockets. You have Judaism demystified, which is, you know, trying to get the word out there, but it's still, we're very small pockets. If you go give a share like I did in a shul and say that you're now allowed to say Tehillim, you're going to have 80% of the crowd upset. 20% will be, hey, that's pretty cool. But the 80% are going to be taking you apart. Like you're taking away the fundamental part of our religion. You know, it's funny. Rambam says on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do akashos. So in shul now, they have, they do for cholim. So what do they do? Mishaberach for cholim. We're going to say Mishaberach and everyone slip in the names of the people that you want to heal, right? And now, recently, it's okay, everybody, stand up because we're doing Mishaberach for the cholim. So why does everyone stand up? First of all, that's what we do bakashas on Shabbos. So now you're going to do Mishaberach, where you're going to slip it in the middle, you know, with that, whisper the name so we don't make it too obvious, but we're all going to stand up for the sick. I mean, there's so many things that go on that make no sense. Once you go into that world of magic, the magic itself makes no sense. There's no logic to what you're doing.
So I wanted to just ask you about, I really want to know about what you think is like kind of a, what are the steps we can take? Because obviously, okay, we could have a podcast about this. We have conversations about this.
Right.
Is there really hope? Is there something we could, like, it's a top down kind of thing that has to happen.
Right.
Because a lot of people will just say, no, it's just it's the few people who are like this. It's not the rabbis. But clearly it's a top down issue. So what is it that, you know, guys like us or whatever it is, how can we affect any type of change if it's starting from the top?
Yeah, you know, it's very difficult. I mean, I think that what we're doing is very important, because if you get the masses in the bottom to start appreciating this kind of thinking, it's going to put pressure on the top.
It has to actually come from the bottom.
It has to come from the bottom. That's the irony. In order to change the top, we at the bottom have to do it. the yeshiva world, the guys who go to yeshiva have to start requesting. We want more Maimonidean thinking. We want more.
Art Scroll just put out a Kitvei Rambam.
Right. So there you go. So that how much they edited.
Magi Publishing is starting to be on the bookshelves of, you know, in Muncie. I my wife sometimes goes to Muncie to for whatever reason. So you know, sometimes I'll go into this farm stores and I'm shocked that in Muncie I see, you know, Magi Publishing all over the place.
I mean, you have you know, blogs online, you know, Sfarim blogs and all these different blogs where you have, you know, Mark Shapiro and you have Lezer Brot, and in our neighborhood in Teaneck, we have this guy First who writes for Hakira lots.
Mitchell First, we had him on our podcast.
He's a very
good. He's very good. I read his stuff all the time.
He's great.
And he has some really great research. He writes for Hakira a bunch of very interesting articles. So you have these guys that are out there spreading, you know, their ideas, but it's not enough. Unfortunately, you need to get a lot more. You need to start getting rabbis of local shuls, you know, small shuls. Well, instead of focusing so much on the halacha, which is very important to focus on halacha, but also focus on our philosophy. Don't talk so much about Mesillas Yesharim. It's all great. We can all read Mesillas Yesharim. It's much more difficult.
Too much fluff. And the excuse is that, you know, the people can't grasp more than this. And
nonsense.
I think it's utter nonsense.
If you give the people a taste, they're going to want more. You know, if you give people understanding, Judaism is much more than this. You see, even Balabatim, I see friends of mine who really are Jewish and Orthodox because it's part of a club. They're not Orthodox because it excites them. It doesn't turn them on. They'll hear a Dvar Torah, oh, very nice, I feel good. But it's more fear. It's more of worshiping God. If I don't do this, I'm going to be struck by lightning. My kids are going to be killed. I'm going to lose my wealth. You know, all these terrible things are going to happen. I'm going to become Eeyore if I don't do what's supposed to be right. And I think that if we start demanding from our rabbis, if we start demanding from ourselves, if we start having shiurim instead of Tehillim clubs, I think that you know, it's a way going in the right direction. Israel, I think, is in big trouble. I think the religious Zionists are hope. You know, you have a lot of these Mizrachnik groups that are much more with it when it comes to Machshava. And I think that's the hope that maybe they also have lots of kids. They also grown families super quick. So maybe they'll outnumber the Haredim first, hopefully, maybe, I don't know. So it's a very scary situation in Israel. But I think in America, I think there is hope. I think YU needs to do more. I think YU needs to step away from the Hasidic world, come back more to the rational world. You know, we need more of Soloveitchiks. Yes. You know, Soloveitchik was a thinker out of the box. If we have more of those people who are pushing Mashavra, Soloveitchik was not a person who says, don't think, don't philosophize. He was all philosophy. Halachic Man was all a book of philosophy. He handed out to the masses.
Great book.
Right. And if you read the recent Chakiras, the 2 or 3 Chakiras that were, they're publishing a couple of Yeshurim, it's phenomenal stuff, all Machshava. So that's what we have to push. That's what YU has to push. That's what the modern Orthodox yeshivas have to push. And if the Haredi yeshivas, you know, really want to make an impact and keep their Talmidim from going off, becoming modern Orthodox, God forbid, then they should also.
What do you say to people who will be like, the Rambam is like a dat yachid, so why should we listen to him? Number one, and or like the Rambam, rationalist thinking will lead to like you know, secularism or whatever it is, like the Enlightenment. You know what?
Hopefully, it does. Enlightenment is a good thing.
Right, but they're referring to the Enlightenment as in like the reform movement and secularism, right?
Yeah, so just the opposite. The reason why people go to conservative reform movement is because they don't find it in orthodoxy. Yeah. So they go become conservative reform because they say, oh, well, this makes a lot more sense. You know, we can live in science. If you say to them, look, you can do it here in orthodox world. In fact, not only can you do it, but this is what orthodoxy is all about. Conservative reformed are actually, they miss the ball. Because they don't keep the mitzvot and Torah to get us to become much more rational, scientific, and a man of the world. And I think that to say the Rambam is a das yachid, any yeshiva guy who learns the Gemara, who goes to a shir, will understand that 80% of the Shia is built around the Rambam.
Yep.
But I mean, not that Yachid. If you, this was this, you know, what do you mean? What about
you have the Meiri,
Benegra, Radak,
endless, endless. But even on the Rambam alone, forget about the Meiri and everyone else. If you go to Yeshiva today, I don't remember a shir that I went to that didn't start off with the Rambam says, and the whole shir is built around the Rambam. If you're brisk, your religion falls apart if you take the Rambam out. There's no learning.
You're following Shulchan Aruch. You're following the Rambam.
He was the
greatest Jewish philosopher and the greatest Jewish halachist.
And ever. Probably one of the greatest Jewish minds, period.
Jewish minds, period.
Yeah.
And everybody knows this, but that's the problem here. It's right. That you could say Dad Yachid, but like you said, you know, it's just, it's not reality.
Even
the Rambam penetrates every aspect of Judaism, halacha, machshava, everything.
You can't even learn a Ramban without him mentioning the Rambam. So if you follow the Ramban, then you can't know without the Rambam.
It's so extreme that it's become that, you know, these they've tried to make the Rambam into a Kabbalist. They've tried to say that the Rambam.
Right. They convert him over.
Everything at the end of his life.
Confessional.
Deathbed confessional. You have that by the Redziner, I think. You know, these things are not. You don't find this like with the Ibn Ezra.
Right.
What I'm trying to say is with. I don't mean to God forbid.
Everyone's trying to.
It means that everyone's aware at how important and how foundational the Rambam is. That you have to go out of your way to try to do something with him, because if you don't, it's a problem.
Right, exactly. So they want to make the Rambam theirs. Notice with this Vayochel Vayishtu with God, now they do that with the Rambam. So now they want to say, you know, how do we benefit from? How do we take his words to make it work for our philosophy? Instead of looking at his philosophy.
You know, there's something that I also, just going back to what we were saying about, you know, people going to the grave and all these things. But if you notice today, what people are really focusing on, like people are very concerned with Ayin Hara. That's like a big
thing. Right.
But like all these things that people are focusing on, or whether they're into the Mashiach, they're following the Rebbe right. or whatever, they're... It becomes the focus of everything, whereas in the Torah it's not even mentioned. It's like it's not the ikar, but all of a sudden for us it's the most important thing,
right?
And this mentality also comes from, you know, I believe it comes from a place of where people feel like this is kind of a teddy bear for them. It's kind of, you know, they need, by having these protections and all these things, they're covering, you know, they're protecting themselves. And you see a lot of people go to Mikubalim. Who goes to Mikubalim? Either people who are extremely, or have someone sick in the family, or they want to protect their money. A lot of them aren't even religious themselves.
Right. And they think that's religion. And the same guy will probably go to a Buddhist, and the same guy will probably go to some kind of guy in India who's you know, Hindu. Because let's try every single one and see which one works.
We've done that. I know people who've done that.
Yeah, it's you know, to me, what's very fascinating about the whole thing is Judaism about God serving me, which is really what Christianity and all the other desires are. How do I get the God to do what I need him to do? And as a result of that, I'm going to do X, Y, Z to convince the God to do what I need him to do. So now the guy who sits at the Aron HaKodesh in Yom Kippur screaming through the Aron HaKodesh, he paid an extra $500 so he could stand by the Aron HaKodesh because he's closer to God, is no different than all these other religions. What makes Judaism unique is I pray to God, I do mitzvot, I do all these things, not to change God, but to change myself. I do all these things so I can get closer to understanding what God is not, in order that I become a different person. It's recreation, right? B'Tselem Elokim is God created the world, and I want to recreate myself. That's B'Tselem Elokim.
Ignus ish socho.
Exactly.
Judaism is not about... Is not about, you know,
getting rewards.
That's not what it's all about. What the Judaism is about, transformation.
Yeah, and if, let's say, a terrible thing happens to me, do I look at it as, oh my God, this terrible thing happened to me personally? I feel the pain, I feel everything. But if you're a man connected to God and you see the world overall, the universe overall, my existence overall, then it's a whole different perspective on what happened to me personally. It's no longer all about me, versus a lot of people walking around practicing Judaism because it's about me. It's worshiping myself. How do I take care of my needs?
There's a heightened stress of hashgacha pratit, which makes everything into a personalized issue.
Right.
So everything bad that happens to me, it's actually a personal, it's
test.
A personal act from God.
Right.
Life.
Right. He's picking on me again.
He's picking on me.
Right.
A very unhealthy way of thinking.
Terrible.
That's what the primitives believe.
And it leads you to it leads you to so many weird, terrible places.
Right.
I think that at the end of all this, I think that
How you cut your nails, even.
I always say this at the end of the day. I think Rabbi Maruf would always say this, and I think it's a good close to this podcast. At the end of the day, if a person really, really studies the Rambam and really takes time to process what he's saying, the Rambam really makes it in a way where your Judaism has no problems. There's no problems.
Right.
You don't have to jump through so many, mental gymnastics and, start going into these weird, trying to figure out, like, why did this happen to me? Why did that happen to me? And, going into all these strange ideas and imaginary
rituals.
Places and rituals. When you have a Maimonidean way of thinking, Judaism becomes, in a way, simple. Difficult in a different way, but simple, right? Simple. It's it's practical.
It's also very focused in a Maimonidean focus is how do I get myself out of myself?
Yes.
How do I change?
It's unselfish.
Exactly. How do I become part of a people? And that's why it's in davening. It's always plural, right? There's always a plural davening. I'm no longer an individual. I'm now part of a nation that's trying to connect to God. So it becomes, I'm no longer myself. I'm outside myself. So when I try to do my daily work, when I try to go and do things in the world, I approach it from a whole different approach. It's not about me all the time. It's about how can I help others? How can I do for others? How can I do B'Tselem Elokim? And it becomes a much more rich religion when you come from that approach. When I do a mitzvah, a lulav, or esrog, it's all nice. But when I have someone at my house for a Shabbos meal or for a Yontif meal, that's a much more valuable practice than how much kidneys I eat or don't eat and so on. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes much more less voodoo and more of what I can do. It's a much more rich religion. It's outside. I'm lifting myself outside myself to become godly.
When Bensi and I started this podcast, we were very conscious of the fact that what we're doing could be positive, but we could also be shattering people's worlds. And when you shatter people's worlds, you leave them with, you have to give them something else
to hold on to
for their world. Yeah. And then just show them, this is wrong and Kabbalah is wrong and this is wrong.
Right.
If you do that, you got to give them something else. You got to show them there's a path. And I always, some people, not very often, usually we get very good feedback. We're like, what if you're gonna rock people's world and it's a little bit negative some episodes or whatever it is, and unfortunately you have to be sometimes, but I think that for the most part I'm surprised at how many people are like, this approach of Rambam is actually very spiritual,
right?
They didn't think, because there's always this idea that it's anti-spiritual, it's dry, and it's this thing it's so inspirational, and there's mysticism outside of Kabbalah, there's all this wisdom that we didn't even know existed. And these are ex-Haredi, ex-Hasidim who kind of want to find a path into
and
Torah.
Not only that, what you can respond also to them is that, we dive, the first bracha Shmona Esrei is Meimis Umachaya. Sometimes in order to bring to life, you have to destroy. And so you're going to kill people's perception of religion. But at the same time, in Machaya, you're going to bring them back to life by showing them a much more beautiful approach to religion. It's no longer an adversarial relationship with God. It's a partnership with God.
Yeah. That's what actually, you just reminded me of something Rabbi Maruf taught us on the Agadah, saying that the rabbis would bring, they would bring someone back to life, right?
Right.
And he's saying that, like, like not having Torah is like death, right?
Right.
Bringing someone back from the dead means that they brought them from
they
no,
filled them with Torah.
They filled them with Torah. They were empty, right? They gave
that's
them.
It's a Chaim.
Yes.
The Chaim in the Gan Eden is Torah. That's what Rambam learns, that pen doesn't mean there that we want to kick him out of Gan Eden, so he doesn't eat from the Eitz HaChaim, but pen he should eat from Eitz HaChaim. If man wants to live forever, he should eat from the Eitz HaChaim. Even when he leaves Gan Eden, the Eitz HaChaim goes with him. The Torah goes with him. So that's exactly it. The Torah is, and when we say Torah, it doesn't mean the magical words of the Torah. It doesn't mean the magical mitzvahs of the Torah. It's what the mitzvah and the Torah is supposed to get you to believe, and what it's supposed to make you proper understanding, proper approach to
in
what
order to become better human beings as well.
Be better human beings, exactly. That's the end of Or Nebuchim. The last chapter in Or Nebuchim is the mitzvahs are there in order to make us better human beings. That's exactly right.
Awesome. This was really a blast, and we're so happy we did this. So Shavua Tov, and
Shavua Tov. And what you guys are doing.
Your father, please.
I will.
Ezrat Hashem, we should do it again.
Amen.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. Shavua Tov.
Appreciate you guys. You too.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning into the Judaism Demystified podcast. We really appreciate all your support and your feedback. If you want to help us grow the podcast, keep spreading the word, share it with your friends, family, or whoever you think would be interested. We also opened a Patreon, so you can become a patron, contribute any small amount you'd like, which would really help us grow the show. Our Patreon is www.patreon.com/Judaism. Pretty easy to remember. Thank you again, and we hope to keep putting out great shows for you guys.